WIP.com.
What we're going to do is throw a lot of banana peels around Chicago and have the machine stumble.
I had a dream that the only reason the employers were so powerful was that we were weak.
There's this myth that black people did not resist until Watts or until the Black Panther Party. It's just not true.
Tune In, Turn On, and Remember is a monthly special program on the history of KBOO Community Radio, commemorating KBOO's 45th anniversary year. The last installment of this special series will be on December 24th at 6 p.m. And listen online to the full series at kboo.fm/tunein/turnon.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrillhurst University, dedicated to helping adults revitalize their careers by offering 5 part-time MBAs, including the Green MBA in Sustainable Business and the MBA in Healthcare Management. Evening, weekend, and online classes allow students to keep days free for work and other commitments, enrolling now for winter and spring terms. It's 5:02. The news is next.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News.
The U.S. is preparing to send Marines into the conflict in South Sudan.
Credit card company American Express is forced to refund close to $80 million.
Edward Snowden has conducted a series of interviews and released more NSA documents.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, December 24th, 2013. I'm Nat Parker.
And I'm Rosalind Scott. American Express has been ordered to pay almost $80 million for engaging in unfair billing tactics and deceptive marketing practices, which affected over 300,000 clients during a 2-year period. Nearly 25% of that figure comes from financial sanctions imposed by 3 separate regulators against the credit card vendor and 2 of its subsidiaries. Those agencies include the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and the newly formed Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, which was created in response to and in the wake of the financial crisis that peaked in 2008. The remaining $59.9 million is ordered as repayment to customers who bought add-on products. American Express promised to stop engaging in such practices and also agreed to independently based review of other products.
Oregon Senator Ron Wyden and Idaho Senator Mike Crapo have introduced legislation that would change the funding of costly catastrophic wildfires. Currently, money for the increasing numbers of large wildfires has been taken from other forest management programs, such as fire prevention, which inadvertently is adding to the number of wildfires occurring. The senators are suggesting that new legislation is needed to treat the increasing numbers of large wildfires as the natural disasters that they are, would instead receive 70% of fundraising from the federal government, and anything above 70% would come from other emergency accounts. This change in funding would free up over $400 million for hazardous fuel reduction programs that could help reduce the number of large wildfires overall. The government has extended the deadline to enroll for healthcare through the healthcare.gov website. Due to heavy traffic and recurring maintenance issues, many have had difficulties accessing the insurance exchange. If you've not already done so already, you now have until this evening at 9 p.m. to enroll for coverage beginning January 1st.
A search party found a missing climber near the summit of Broken Top in the Cascade Range west of Bend. Deschutes County Sheriff's Office reports that when searchers found 25-year-old Michael Holmes on Monday night, he was cold, wet, and exhausted. Holmes messaged friends that he'd run into trouble but planned to snowshoe out on Monday. When they did not hear from him after that, his friends contacted authorities. Holmes spent Sunday night on the mountain, and though he is an experienced, well-equipped climber, he was not prepared for an extended stay in worsening weather. The search party who found Holmes returned him to his vehicle.
PETA has awarded local rescue organization Portland Mountain Rescue with a Compassionate Action Award for its rescue of a puppy at the Oneida Gorge on Sunday. This award is one of about 30 that PETA gives to individuals and organizations per year. KBU reporter Jemiah Cherry spoke with PETA and Portland Mountain Rescue about the event.
I'm speaking with Mark Morford from Portland Mountain Rescue in regards to the dog that was rescued. And hello, Mark.
Hey, good afternoon, Jemiah.
All right. So can you tell me a little bit about the rescue?
Well, on Sunday morning, some hikers in the Triple Falls area in Columbia Gorge reported that they could hear a dog barking at the bottom of the cliffs around the falls. Those are really steep cliffs. The hikers couldn't see the dog, but they worried that maybe there was a person down there with the dog, and so they called 911. The sheriff's department was concerned about the possibility of a human subject because several years ago we had a very similar incident there where there was a dog barking at the bottom of those same cliffs and there was a person who had fallen to their death there. So they took it very seriously. They called out Portland Mountain Rescue early Sunday afternoon. We sent a team out there, and as we were headed up the trail approaching the overlook at the falls, we ran into a tearful dog owner who was coming down the trail, and she told us that she'd been hiking there on Saturday and her dog Rocky had fallen over the cliff. She could hear him barking down there, but they couldn't get to him on Saturday. It got dark. They hiked out. They had come back on Sunday to look for Rocky, but they hadn't heard him barking and they couldn't get down to the bottom of the falls. So she was headed home heartbroken. We radioed all that back to the sheriff. The sheriff then interviewed some other friends that had been up looking for the dog and concluded there wasn't a human subject, and so appropriately called off the rescue mission. So here we are standing on the overlook above the cliff with a tearful dog owner, and we're all roped up and ready to go. So we decided it was a training exercise and sent one of our members, Scott Norton, over the edge. 5 minutes after he started over the edge, little Rocky poked up his head and started jumping around and yipping. And Rocky is a 7-month-old puppy, a mix of Labrador and Dachshund, I think. So Scott reached him, got him quieted down, took a little while, and eventually got hold of him and stuffed him in his pack, cinched up the pack nice and tight, and we raised Scott and Rocky back up over the cliff to safety, greeted by a delighted dog owner, and we hiked everybody out safe and sound for a Merry Christmas.
Wow. How often does Portland Mountain Rescue, do you guys perform any sort of animal rescue? Is that kind of common?
We don't do dogs.
So this was the first time?
We're dispatched by the sheriff's office for human subject search and rescues. There is a group associated that you can contact through the Humane Society for pet rescues, and they do technical rescues in circumstances like this. But in this case, the sheriff believed there could be a human subject, so we were called out. It happens to us every couple of years where there's a human and their dog that are falling off a cliff, tapping on Mount Hood a couple times, or lost up on Mount Hood. And so we've rescued a few dogs, but it's not what we normally do.
Well, we're glad that everything worked out fine. We spoke with someone from PETA in regards to Portland Mountain Rescue receiving a Compassionate Action Award. Did you guys get to receive that yet?
Yeah, that was great. It is amazing when you take care of a pet. Everybody really likes that, and we're, of course, gratified to get the attention.
All right. I know you guys are very busy this time of year, so thank you very much for the action that you guys take in place.
Pleasure to chat with you, Jemai.
All right. Thanks again, Mark.
Yeah. Bye now.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
The battle to extend federal unemployment benefits is underway even in the midst of the congressional holiday break. 1,300,000 jobless Americans are losing those benefits December 28th. Another 2.5 million long-term unemployed people could lose those benefits in 2014. Unless Republicans in Congress act to restore the extended jobless benefits. Democrats are working to extend those benefits by putting pressure on House Republicans. A U.S. Senate vote will be taken in January to renew the extended benefits. It's possible for Congress to vote to retroactively restore the benefits, even for the 1.3 million set to lose them December 28th. Labor unions and progressive organizations are launching media ad campaigns and events calling for unemployment benefits to be extended. AFSCME, the AFL-CIO, SEIU, and the UAW are among the unions that are participating in a big local media push. A Pew poll shows overwhelming public support, 59-33%, for prioritizing aid to the poor over deficit reduction. A public policy poll of four GOP House districts, including Speaker John Boehner's, also shows 63-68% in each district support extension of jobless benefits. 26 U.S. senators are now co-sponsoring the Manufacturing Jobs for America initiative aimed at revitalizing America's manufacturing industry to create more good jobs. Wisconsin U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin.
It's an initiative to bring together a bunch of really good ideas that will help strengthen manufacturing in America. After decades, frankly, of erosion in that sector of our economy, I just believe you can't have an economy built to last that doesn't involve making things.
The Manufacturing Jobs for America initiative has the support of the AFL-CIO, the National Association of Manufacturers, Ford Motor Company, the United Auto Workers, United Steelworkers, Dow, DuPont, General Electric, and the Blue-Green Alliance, among others. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, and the Association of Professional Flight Attendants Unions have ironed out how flight attendants at American Airlines will be represented at the new merged airline. The CWA union is representing the pre-merger U.S. Airways attendants, while the other union will represent American Airlines attendants. The unions will now work together to get the best possible contract for the new merged airline's 24,000 union flight attendants. The Office of Professional Employees International Union, OPEIU, says it's very pleased that a frivolous unfair labor practices charge against the union and the AFL-CIO was dismissed by the National Labor Relations Board. The NLRB found no merit in the allegation from the anti-union National Right to Work Foundation. The bogus allegation was that the union threatened that unless an employee joined the union and paid dues, he would be fired and escorted off the property.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Same-sex marriages continue in Utah today in spite of protests from that state's attorney general. On Friday, U.S. District Court Judge Richard Shelby ruled that Utah's ban on same-sex marriages violates the Constitution. As hundreds of same-sex couples applied for marriage licenses, the state filed a notice of appeal and a request to halt all same-sex marriages until the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals rules on the case. Judge Shelby rejected that request from the state. In his ruling, Judge Shelby stated that same-sex couples have a fundamental right to marry.
In a review of the year's top stories on Feature Story News, Natalie Powell and Dan Whitehead speak with Simon Marks about the impact of NSA spying on the relationship between the U.S. and Europe.
Now, there is, of course, at least one person, not in your immediate vicinity, but not too far from you, who does not currently enjoy very much freedom of movement, and that would be the fugitive whistleblower Edward Snowden, whose revelations of the extent of America's national security activities, not just domestically but internationally, made headlines around the world in 2013. How's he viewed in the UK, and how much have the revelations that he unleashed damaged President Obama's reputation there?
What we've seen over the last 7 months or so since the first article was published in the Guardian newspaper is bigger questions about freedom of speech. You know, the Guardian's editor, Adam Rusbridger, was giving evidence at the Home Affairs Select Committee towards the end of the year and said that only around 1% of Edward Snowden's leaks have been published by the paper and that there's plenty more. But we saw some really bizarre things in the summer from when this data was gathered from these four laptops from Edward Snowden, and top secret GCHQ bots came down to the Guardian offices in King's Cross to the basement and made them get angle grinders and sledgehammers and smash up these laptops, despite the editors of the paper saying that they've already made copies, which are located in countries such as Brazil and so forth. So you've seen governments really panicking over it. The head of MI6 saying that Britain's enemies are rubbing their hands with glee that all of these leaks are coming out. But really, there's no evidence yet that, and you know, certainly the editors of these papers which are involved in leaking these, but The Guardian especially here in the UK, really denying that they have compromised national security, and nor have they compromised the identities of any of the people who work for the national security agencies. What this has really brought up is the issue of how much is my government watching me, and why are they, and what are they using it for?
People think that, you know, whether it's the UK government or the US government, a lot of surveillance is being carried out in the interest of national security, and this will upset people, and sometimes it will also upset other countries. You know, we did see as part of these revelations that one of the meetings of world leaders, we did see from these revelations that the UK was spying on the emails that were being sent by world leaders once here, and that caused quite a bit of annoyance from some of these countries that were allegedly being spied on, such as South Africa, China. So I think when it comes to this sort of issue, the UK and the US are seen as being doing quite a lot of invading of people's privacy.
And Natalie, just to wrap this up, you spoke earlier about the growing ties economically between the United Kingdom and China. David Cameron finished the year by traveling to China and trying to cement some business ties. Is there a sense from the vantage point of London, perhaps more so than from the vantage point of New York or Washington, D.C., that we really are now seeing seismic shifts in the battle for influence globally, that you saw Vladimir Putin rush to seize the initiative on Syria, that you see China now emerging as a rising world power, and the United States to some extent playing catch up?
Well, I think it's very interesting if you hear what, for example, David Cameron has said, or the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson. They are very keen to have that Chinese investment. There's no doubt in their minds about how much influence China has economically. It's an economic muscle is tremendous, and how much that investment can help the UK. So certainly in that regard, China is seen as being a very good partner for the UK. Really, they're doing everything they can to woo China and get their investment. But what's interesting, it's not just inward investment into the UK in infrastructure, in trains, in buildings, in ports. The UK is also very keen to export to China. Now, the European Union was traditionally one of the biggest export markets, but of course, a lot of countries there still facing economic difficulties. So trying to export more to China, we're seeing luxury brands, major luxury brands, trying to export more, the likes of Burberry and other British luxury retailers. But it's really across the board. We were just speaking to some pig producers the other day that are trying to increase their exports of pigs' heads and pigs' feet and bits of offal to China. And they think that's going to add about 15% to the value of British pigs. So definitely a sense that China in that regard is a leading player.
And Dan Whitehead or Natalie Powell, is all that taking place at the cost of democracy promotion on the global stage?
I think we saw from David Cameron's visit that he slightly skirted around issues of human rights and so forth in China and the government there. I think they're very conscious. Britain is very conscious of its ties being purely business here, and you know, China has a lot of money to invest, and we are now seeing that left, right, and centre, as Natalie says, whether it's airports, pig producers, or the movie industries between China and the UK linking up together, you know, more. But it's in the back of their minds. But I think the key thing that the British government is doing, apart from trying to skirt away from the issue, is just to really separate Britain's involvement with China and make it purely a business operation.
Well, a busy year ahead for the three of you and your colleagues in the FSN London Bureau. Natalie Powell, Dan Whitehead, and Natalie Fiery joining us from London. Thanks to you all.
NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden will deliver an address tomorrow for British television broadcaster Channel 4. The speech will be a pre-recorded message broadcast as an alternative to Queen Elizabeth's annual Christmas Day message. This will be the first televised media appearance from Snowden since being granted asylum in Russia.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for the latest headlines from Democracy Now! After this newscast, followed by Tune In, Turn On, and Remember at 6 when we have our final installment of the series commemorating KBOO history. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather forecast, mostly sunny after morning fog. The temperature is expected to be high of 47. The National Weather Service has issued an air stagnation advisory for the Portland metro area. The lack of wind and low air quality mix is expected to be in effect until Friday afternoon. Emergency shelters are open tonight in Oregon City, Forest Grove, Clackamas, and Malala. Portland shelters are not open. In today's Radcast, the only citizen-led radiation count on the air, radiation levels for today are 32 counts per minute in North Portland, high of 57. In Beaverton, it's 29 CPM with a high of 47. Damascus, Oregon has a count of 30 CPM, high of 47. Pal Butte measures 26 CPM with a high of 44. Medford, Oregon has 36 CPM, high of 55. Hanford, Washington has 34 CPM, high of 51. And Sitka, Alaska has a radiation count of 32 counts per minute with spikes up to 52. EPA alert levels start at 100 CPM. More information can be found at radcast.org.
Time is 5:24, and it is time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Here's a twist on Christmas that would make Jesus weep. First, a right-wing faction in the U.S. has been wringing its hands over a hokey cultural crisis cooked up by the faction itself, namely that liberals, atheists, humanists, and, God forbid, Marxists are waging a war on Christmas. The infidels are not accused of lobbing bombs in this war, but words of mass destruction. Specifically, the right-wing purists wail that unholy lefties are perverting the season by saying Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas. Second, some ultra-conservative members of this same faction have launched their own war against Jesus. How twisted is this? They say no one should mess with the word Christmas, yet they're messing with the guy Christmas is supposed to be about. Okay, technically, they're not going directly at Jesus, but at a key part of his message, and in particular, at a key messenger of Christianity, Pope Francis. They've decided that the Pope is a Marxist, pointing out that Francis speaks often about the, quote, structural causes of poverty, the idolatry of money, and the new tyranny of unfettered capitalism. Obviously, say the pontiff's pious critics, that's commie talk. The clincher for them was when Francis wrote an official papal document in which he asked in outrage, how can it be that it is not a news item when an elderly homeless person dies of exposure, but it is news when the stock market loses 2 points? See, cried the carpers, that's proof that Francis is the Red Pope. But wait, that was a very good question he asked, one ripe with the moral wrath that Jesus himself frequently showed toward the callous rich and their love of money. Indeed, the Pope's words ring with deep ethics you find in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Was he a commie too? This is Jim Hightower saying, could it be that the carpers are actually the ones lacking in real Christmas spirit?
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at hightowerlowdown.org.
The Coalition of Emma Colley Workers held a protest today in Columbus, Ohio, at the flagship news store of Wendy's Corporation. 120 Emma Colley workers and supporters picketed the grand opening of Wendy's new flagship store to demand that Wendy's sign on to the same contract that most of the other big fast food chains have already signed. Pacifica radio reporters were there and bring us the voices of the protesters along with their confrontation with a representative of the company.
Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
What do we want?
Justice.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Justice.
When do we want it?
Now.
We're here. We're over 100 strong today. Thank you for coming. We're growing. Let's hear it. Let them hear us. From inside, let's hear. Let them hear us.
How would you say the demonstrations have grown at this point since you first began, now that the school's out of session? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, no.
¿Cómo ha crecido las demostraciones? Aquí en Ohio, por todo el país,
¿cómo
ha crecido las manifestaciones, las acciones y todo?
Ha crecido bastante porque la gente se ha dado cuenta de la importancia, la necesidad de hacer cambios para el respeto a los trabajadores.
It's the growing course.
Good seeing you again.
Good to see you as well.
I understand you have another petition for us.
We do. We do. We will.
Another 100,000 names.
We will keep bringing them until you're ready to sit down and have a conversation.
All right, well, it's cold day. We wanted to save you from having to go up and come to another location.
Okay.
So I just came to
sit.
I was waiting for you up there, so I just came on down here. So.
Can someone briefly describe the petitions that you're submitting?
¿Alguien puede describir la petición que viene?
So this is a petition that was led by anti-slavery organization Walk Free that carries over 150,000 signatures from around the world, all calling on Wendy's to join the Fair Food Club.
Dear Emil Brolich, Wendy's company CEO, I was disappointed to learn that Wendy's is the last of the 5 major U.S. fast food companies refusing to join the Fair Food Program and ensure modern-day slavery is not in your tomato supply chain. While McDonald's, Burger King, Subway, and Taco Bell have all come to the table, Wendy's continues to drag its feet. As the previous CEO of Taco Bell, when that fast food giant joined, you know the Fair Food Program is effective in the fight against modern slavery in the U.S. tomato industry. I call on you, Mr. Brolich, to sign the Fair Food Agreement now and to help end slavery forever in Florida's tomato fields. Sincerely, 156,343 Fair Food supporters across the U.S. and counting.
Thank Sir, you can you tell much. Me, has this been on the agenda for any meetings, the support of trustees?
I will talk to you separately about it.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Do you have a card?
You'll find me. It's bob.bertini@wendys.com.
Great, thank you.
You can go online and click.
So, This is the second time that we've been together.
Yes, we're getting to know each other here.
Right. And I guess as somebody who grew up in Wendy's hometown and who went to the same school with Wendy and who is very aware of the founding beliefs of your founding father, Dave Thomas, I am having a, and I've read everything that you've put on the website about your response to the Fair Food Agreement, to why there is a refusal to sign this agreement, but I'm left dumbfounded, not understanding why there is no interest in even sitting down with CIW and talking about collaboration in this effort.
Well, you have your, you know, we appreciate your and respect your opinion and your voice and to express that, and many others. We have our opinion, and I think we've laid it out very clearly. So.
But in your opinion, what I understand from the website is that you're saying that you don't want to sign this agreement because the agreement that's been signed by your competitors is already working to modernize the fields, but that... So that leaves me believing that the only thing that is standing in the way is the extra penny per pound, which is not being paid by Wendy's, but is being paid and is seen in the paychecks of the workers by McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's and Taco Bell.
Yeah, and all of our suppliers in Florida have already signed the Fair Food Agreement and deal with all the regulations dealing with treatment of workers and so forth. So we've been pretty clear about what our position is. We already pay a premium for our tomatoes in Florida, and we expect our suppliers to compensate their employees. Okay?
But Mr. Bertini, respectfully, you're not paying that premium. You're enjoying the fruits, so to speak, of the labor of those who have signed the Fair Food Agreement.
Because of our quality, we already pay a premium for tomatoes, and we expect our suppliers to pass that on to their employees. Those employees do not work for us.
Is there a mechanism for enforcement?
Sorry, one more.
I'm sorry. I've had enough.
No, I think Santiago
from the coalition... Yo entiendo que Wendy dice que están pagando un premio, pero ¿cómo hacemos para ver si es cierto? El caso... De que si hay esclavitud, ¿qué haría Wendy's para liberar estas personas?
With regard to the premium that Wendy says it already pays, my question is, how is that premium related to the quality of life for the farm workers that are in your supply chain? And how can we monitor, how can we audit, how can we ensure that that premium is, A, being paid, and B, has to do with farm workers? And the second question that I have is...
All of our suppliers have signed the Fair Food Agreement in Florida. All of the conditions dealing with worker conditions. So we've all signed the agreement.
And the second question that I have with regard to that is that mm-hmm. What happens in that case? So you're buying from farms that have complied with the Fair Food Program. What happens in a case of slavery? Will you continue to buy from those farms?
First of all, slavery in any form is abhorrent, and we do not support that in any way, in any form, period. And if you knew anything about our company, which has stood for years to help children find homes and foster care, we would not stand for that. And if slavery exists in any condition, then the authorities should prosecute and fully pursue it. It's only right. It's the right thing to do, and we would support that. Okay?
I'm not going to get into Tenemos 11 corporaciones que están trabajando, están ayudando a eliminar estos problemas, y que queremos que Wendy sea uno de esos, porque si están pagando el centavo está bien, pero ¿cómo hacemos para ratificar si es cierto?
There are 11 major corporations that have already joined the Fair Food Program that are enabling us to root out these abuses from the fields for once and for all, and we want Wendy's to be a part of that phenomenal change. We know that you've said that you're paying a premium. Farm workers are not receiving that premium, so we don't know what it's for. But if you are paying a premium, or if you are buying from farms, why not commit to the change that you say you support?
Again, we've made our position very clear on our website, and we stand by that position. But I appreciate your coming here today, and a voice in your opinion,
okay,
and your voice. Okay. Same to you as well. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Do you feel as though today represented some progress?
Entonces, ¿has visto progreso hoy? ¿Has visto un cambio hoy o algo entre la respuesta o la gente acá?
Bueno, la respuesta de ellos ha sido la misma todo el tiempo.
The response from them has stayed the same the
pero,
entire time.
La iniciativa de la gente, consumidores, gente que tiene el poder, se ha dado cuenta de la necesidad de los trabajadores, pero están apoyando.
But what's powerful to see is the response from consumers, from community members who have come together, who've united here today, who've made it clear that they stand in solidarity with farm workers, and that pushes us forward.
Mm-hmm. And we're in Ohio in the middle of a very cold winter day with snow on the ground, and school
estamos
is out of
Ohio,
session,
bien, bien frío,
and
nieve.
Yet there are 120 people here, which is larger than
sensación.
Previous demonstrations.
Pero hay 120 mm-hmm. personas aquí,
nosotros siempre...
Marca, ¿no?
Florida es un estado que está bien caliente, pero nosotros hemos andado por todo el territorio de los Estados Unidos haciendo protesta, no solo con Wendy's, con otras corporaciones, y estamos aquí es por la necesidad que hay para los trabajadores.
Indeed, it's true. And for us as people from Florida, the cold is even more shocking to us. But we'll stand the cold. We'll stand any kind of cold because the suffering in the fields is more important than the cold that we feel today. We've been to so many corporations. They've all seen the light, and now it's time to invite Wendy's to become one of those corporations as well.
Y cada día más gente se está involucrando a esta campaña porque la gente se ha dado cuenta cómo está funcionando el programa por comida justa. Es un modelo diferente, un modelo único en este país.
Every day there are more and more people, more and more conscientious consumers who are joining the effort to call for fair food because they understand the power of this program. The fair food program is unique in this country in the way that it employs all of these various mechanisms to root out abuse from the fields once and for all.
Y la lucha apenas empieza. Vamos a seguir llevando esta campaña a diferentes condados de los Estados Unidos hasta que un día Wendy's se va a cansar de nosotros y va a tener que escuchar.
And we're not about to throw in the towel. In fact, this struggle is just beginning. We will continue to be here. We'll continue to be out here. We'll be all over the country until Wendy's comes on the right side of history and joins the Fair Food Program.
Bueno, gracias. ¿Cómo se llama?
Santiago Pérez.
Gracias.
Okay.
I'm Jessica Schimberg. This is important to me because I am a consumer, because I eat, and because I am someone who is very much stands with justice and moving forward and modernizing in our country, to me, begins with things like human rights in the fields, not with flat-screen televisions in fancy restaurants. I first found out about what was going on in the fields of Florida when I'm a foodie, so I was reading Gourmet magazine, and I saw an article in Gourmet magazine that showed these hands holding green tomatoes covered with filth and pesticides, and I had to know more, and so I went down with Rabbis for Human Rights and spent my last birthday last year in Immokalee learning from CIW about what was happening in my own country in this day, and was I couldn't not do something.
Those were the voices of protesters challenging the practices of the Wendy's Corporation. Farm workers with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers continue their struggle for fair wages and better working conditions. Their website is CIWonline.org.
On Monday, the Pentagon moved 150 U.S. Marines from their base in Spain to Eastern Africa in response to escalating violence in South Sudan. The U.S. has already evacuated about 400 U.S. citizens since the fighting began. Four U.S. troops were injured last Friday during an aborted rescue mission eerily similar to the 1993 massacre in Mogadishu. A Pentagon Army spokesman declined to offer details on the number of U.S. troops deployed or whether any American troops would be entering South Sudan. Last Tuesday, the UN doubled the amount of peacekeepers in the region to 12,500. This, in spite of UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon's statement that there could be, quote, no military solution to this conflict, and that, quote, this is a political crisis which requires a peaceful political solution. South Sudan is an impoverished country in the region known as the Horn of Africa, which achieved independence in 2011 after a 22-year civil war with Sudan. A battle for resources, particularly oil, was one of the reasons for the bloodshed which left over 1 million people dead. Since independence, South Sudan has gained control of the majority of the oil reserves. However, because it is in a landlocked country, it remains dependent on Sudan's oil pipeline and processing facilities. In early 2012, South Sudan voluntarily shut down all of its oil production because it believed the Sudanese government was charging exorbitant oil transfer fees. This decision did not go unnoticed by the United States and the international community. This is the most notable escalation of force in Eastern Africa since the Somali conflict of 1993.
Mikhail Kalashnikov, the creator of the most feared assault rifle of our time, has died at the age of 94. Kalashnikov was inspired to create the AK-47 while fighting against the Nazis during World War II. He had seen his Russian countrymen struggle to defend their country using 50-year-old rifles against the Nazis who had access to automatic weapons. The AK-47 was designed to be rugged, simple, and easy to operate and to withstand sand, grit, mud, and humidity. It became the weapon of choice for many armies and combatants around the world, including some former Vietnam veterans. While the American-issued M16 is more precise and effective at long distances, it contains many moving parts and was prone to jamming in the jungles of Vietnam. This allowed the Viet Cong, who were equipped with AK-47s, to frequently get the upper hand in battles with American troops. Speaking a few years before his death, he stated that he wished that instead of the AK-47, he'd invented a machine which people could use which would do good for farmers. At one point, he even considered establishing a fund for gunshot victims. Kalashnikov is survived by a son, two daughters, and two grandsons.
The list of retailers involved in establishing a compensation fund for those impacted by a garment factory that collapsed earlier this year in Bangladesh suggests U.S. clothiers aren't participating. Those pledging to contribute to the fund include El Corte Inglés from Spain, the United Kingdom's Bon Marche Primark from Dublin, and Canadian firm Loblaw. More than 1,000 workers died in April when an illegally built 8-story structure crumbled due to substandard construction. The incident sparked an international wave of criticism over unsafe working conditions for the country's 4 million garment workers.
A bombing in northern Egypt killed at least 14 people and injured at least 120 this morning. The bomb struck a police headquarters in the city of Mansoura, about 75 miles north of the capital city of Cairo. No one has taken responsibility for the bombing at present, though the interim government has blamed the Muslim Brotherhood for the blast. The Muslim Brotherhood, however, has condemned the violence and called a direct attack on the unity of the Egyptian people in a statement. On Sunday, an Islamic militant group known as the Champions of Jerusalem warned police officers and soldiers to desert their post under threat of violence. Violence has been on the rise in Europe since the military ousted democratically elected Prime Minister Mahmoud Morsi in July. Morsi was a former leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, and his political party, the Freedom and Justice Party, was founded by the Muslim Brotherhood. At present, Morsi is facing 3 sets of charges, including escaping from jail during the uprising against former President Hosni Mubarak. The blast caused the building it struck to partially collapse and the windows of nearby buildings to shatter. People felt the impact of the blast at least 12 miles from the site of the bombing, officials say. The majority of those killed by the bombing were police officers, and officials report that the provincial security chief was wounded in the attack. Tuesday's bombing followed a protest in Cairo on Monday. At the protest, dozens of people rallied against the jailing of 3 activists who helped lead the uprising against ousted President Hosni Mubarak. The 3 activists were the first to be sentenced under a new law that requires 7 different permits for rallies, a law that effectively bans gatherings of more than 10 people.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Tuesday, December 24th, 2013. Palestinians' Christmas celebrations were interrupted today by Israeli army attacks on Gaza that left two civilians killed. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. The Israeli army has bombarded several areas in the Gaza Strip, killing two Palestinians, including one child, and wounding at least four, one seriously. Two of the wounded are children. Medical sources said that Hala Ahmed Al-Buhairi, 3, was killed by an Israeli missile in central Gaza, and 4 were wounded in the shelling. One of them is in critical conditions. The sources added that Hala's mother, her brothers Bilal, 3, and Muhammad, 6, were injured when the army bombarded a house near a chicken farm east of Al-Maghazi refugee camp in central Gaza. Furthermore, a young man was also killed when the Israeli Air Force fired missiles into Beit Lahia town in northern Gaza. Another Palestinian was moderately wounded in the attack. Meanwhile, the Hamas-led government in Gaza vacated its entire headquarters, fearing a possible Israeli military escalation against the coastal region. In the West Bank, Israeli soldiers invaded between Monday evening and Tuesday morning several areas in the occupied West Bank, kidnapped 11 Palestinians, including 6 in the northern West Bank district of Nablus. Elsewhere, dozens of Israeli soldiers have invaded the Al-Fayasl Al-Wusta area in the Jordan Valley on Tuesday midday and demolished one home and 4 sheds. In other news, thousands of Palestinians gathered on Tuesday at the Menger Square just outside the Church of Nativity in Bethlehem City, southern West Bank, to celebrate Christmas. The Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and many local and international officials joined the celebrations as well. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Tuesday, December 24, 2013, news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please keep visiting our website at www.imemc.org. We wish you a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Today's report has been brought to you by George Ishmawi and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
Listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Kelly Sunrose, Robin Ryan, Gabriel Adra, and the producer is Jamae Cherry. Special thanks to our engineer, Liam Delta. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jinka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Rosalind Scott.
And I'm Nat Parker. And coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, tune in for a special eclectic morning concert with Steve Nassar. At 10, hear a World War II Radio Christmas 1943 edition, recorded earlier this month at Oregon Children's Theater. The show blends war-era songs and humorous sketches with true stories of life in and around Portland. And at 11 a.m. on the Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter looks at Sunday Assemblies, which are gatherings for non-believers, with Ron Handy, Corin Lehman, and Jenna Padbury, who are supporting the creation of a Sunday Assembly here in Portland. Happy holidays. Thanks for listening to KBOO, and thanks to KBOO members for your generous support for community radio. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. And now stay tuned for a live interview conducted by KBOO reporters. Good night, Roslyn.
Good night, Nat.
Tune in at 6 p.m. Wednesday, December 25th, Christmas Day, for The Underground. Hosted by the KBOO Youth Collective, the show this month will feature stories and other works on the theme of magic. Learn about magician secrets, witches, Harry Potter, and more. That's Wednesday the 25th at 6 p.m. Christmas Day here on KBOO.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is calling for a near doubling of the international peacekeeping force in South Sudan amid spiraling violence. On Monday, Ban asked the Security Council to send up to 5,500 more troops.
All this watching, all sides in South Sudan, attacks on civilians and the UN peacekeepers deployed to protect them must cease immediately. The United Nations will investigate reports of grave human rights violations and crimes against humanity. Those responsible at the senior level will be held personally accountable and face the consequences, even if they claim they had no knowledge of the attacks.
The Security Council is due to vote on Ban's proposal today. South Sudan's violence erupted earlier this month when President Salva Kiir accused his former deputy, Riek Machar, of mounting a coup. On Monday, Machar said the release of opposition leaders is a precondition for talks.
We are ready to start dialogue as soon as my comrades under detention, the SPLM leaders, Leda has enumerated to you, are released and evacuated to a little ground for credibly added. Because these are the people who will be engaged in the dialogue. We want a peaceful settlement of this conflict. We do not want our people to be subjected to a lot of suffering. They have already suffered enough.
Hundreds have been killed and thousands have sought refuge at UN facilities to escape the fighting. A week of bombing by the Assad regime in northern Syria has reportedly left over 300 people dead. Syrian government helicopters have been hitting the town of Aleppo with the highly destructive barrel bombs, oil drums filled with explosives and sometimes with nails or scrap metal. The opposition Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says the death toll includes 87 children. Over 80 people were reportedly killed Monday. At least 14 people were killed and over 120 wounded when a car bomb hit a police station in northern Egypt. The Egyptian government has blamed the attack on the Muslim Brotherhood, calling it a terrorist organization. In a statement, the Muslim Brotherhood condemned the bombing as a direct attack on the unity of the Egyptian people. No one's claimed responsibility so far. Earlier on Monday, dozens of people rallied in Cairo against the jailing of three leading activists who helped lead the uprising against Hosni Mubarak. The three were the first to be sentenced under a new law that effectively bans public protests by requiring seven different permits for rallies.
It makes us very surprised that the government that has reached power after demonstrations against Mohamed Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood takes such measures against the activists and put them in prison. We will definitely continue opposition to this demonstration law because we think it violates all international conventions and even the constitution that's been recently reached.
Israel has released a Palestinian prisoner whose lengthy hunger strike helped spark major protests in the occupied territories. Samer Sawi was initially released under the 2011 deal that freed Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit, only to be rearrested and returned to an Israeli prison last year. Sawi staged a hunger strike that spanned 8 months and fueled solidarity actions by other Palestinian prisoners and rallies in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Sawi ended his hunger strike in April after Israel agreed to set him free in return. The Israeli government is seeking an explanation from the U.S. after becoming the latest country to be caught up in the NSA spying scandal. Documents leaked by Edward Snowden show the NSA monitored the emails of then-Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and other top Israeli officials in 2009. On Monday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called the surveillance unacceptable.
Concerning matters published in the past few days, I have asked for an examination in the matter. In the close ties between Israel and the United States, there are things that must not be done and that are not acceptable to us.
In a lengthy interview published by The Washington Post today, Edward Snowden declared mission accomplished in his exposure of NSA surveillance. Snowden said, quote, "As soon as the journalists were able to work, everything that I had been trying to do was validated. Because, remember, I didn't want to change society. I wanted to give society a chance to determine if it should change itself," he said. Snowden also repeated his denials of sharing the leaked documents with foreign governments, including his host country, Russia. Snowden said, quote, "If I defected at all, I defected from the government to the public." The Obama administration has extended a deadline until today for Americans seeking health insurance, starting January 1st through the healthcare.gov website. The 24-hour grace period was announced as over a million people flooded the site Monday in a symbolic move to promote the healthcare exchanges. The White House says President Obama personally enrolled in a bronze plan online over the weekend. Same-sex marriages are continuing in Utah after a federal judge refused to overturn his decision striking down the state's ban. On Monday, U.S. District Judge Robert Shelby rejected arguments from Utah's attorney general, saying he stands by his ruling that marriage is a fundamental right for all. Dozens of couples exchange vows at the city clerk's office in Salt Lake City.
You know, I don't think it'll change day-to-day life for us, obviously, but it is nice to know that there's some formal recognition for the relationship that we've created over the last 18 years. So it's just a nice way to sort of commemorate the relationship that we share.
And just to have this opportunity in Utah, in our home state, because we could have gone to California, we could have gone to another state, but we're Utahns, and that is huge. That's huge. We're pioneers. I mean, you know, it's so awesome.
Meanwhile, in Ohio, a federal judge has issued a partial rejection of the state's gay marriage ban. On Monday, Judge Timothy Black ruled Ohio's unlawfully discriminating against gay spouses married out of state and barring them from appearing on their partner's death certificate. LGBT advocates gathered in Uganda on Monday to vow opposition to the country's new anti-gay law. Uganda's parliament passed a measure last week that imposes a sentence of life in prison for repeated homosexual acts. It also makes it a crime not to report LGBT people. Ugandan activist Kasha Jacqueline vowed to challenge the measure in court.
If we fail in the courts of Uganda, we shall go to the African courts. And if we fail in the African court, we shall go to the international court. Because the reason why actually we are not already in court when this bill was passed, because you cannot challenge something that is not already passed. When it was proposed in parliament, we couldn't challenge it, because you cannot challenge something that is not passed. But now that it's passed, it has actually made us stronger. It has paved a way, a shorter way for us to go to the constitutional court. And for us, that's one positive thing we've seen about this, despite all the setbacks.
A number of U.S. evangelicals have been tied to anti-LGBTQ fervor in Uganda, with some reportedly helping draft the newly passed law. The two freed members of the Russian punk group Pussy Riot are calling for a boycott of the upcoming Winter Olympics following their release from prison. Nadia Tolokonokova and Maria Alyokhina had been jailed since last March for protesting Russian leader Vladimir Putin in an Orthodox cathedral. They were due to be released within the next month, but were freed earlier under an amnesty that Putin proposed. Tolokonokova called Putin's amnesty a cynical act.
This is a cynical act. Putin blamed us for carrying out cynical acts, but in reality, his today's act is much more cynical, to release those people who do not need to be released. These remaining 2 months, I could have easily spent where I was, and at the same time, he refused to release those people who really needed it. It's a disgusting and cynical act.
The Pussy Riot members say the world should boycott the Winter Games in the Russian city of Sochi in February to protest Putin's record on human rights. And New York City has reportedly settled hundreds of lawsuits over the mass arrest of protesters at the 2004 Republican National Convention. Over 1,800 people were detained during the RNC, with many held in squalid conditions and for far longer than legally allowed. According to the New York Times, the new settlement would cover most or all pending lawsuits, with some payments totaling several million dollars. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 6:01. And coming up next, tune in, turn on, remember.
Welcome to the final episode of Tune In, Turn On, Remember, 45 years of KBOO history. I'm Dan Johnson. It might be safe to say that KBOO has been building community for the last 45 years, and we've all been a part of the history in the making. Jenka Soderberg and I have hosted this year-long event, bringing you so many highlights of those involved with KBOO from way back then to here and now. Please enjoy this final hour of Tune In, Turn On, Remember. During the year, Jenka filed this story about some happenings at Pacifica, which originally aired on Democracy Now!. This occurred in 1999.
We are going to hear what the KPFA news sounded like last night. It was about 6:10 Pacific Standard Time when their news goes on. Mark Miracle was doing the cast, the news director at KPFA.